Thank you very much. Everybody knows the House come to order. The next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 6. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Joint Resolution 6, introduced by Representative Luthe, a joint resolution relating to taxation and revenue regarding residential property uniformity of assessment, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
You've heard the reading of the resolution. Do we have anyone that wants to address that or present that? We have an amendment on it, Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that shows that you're the sponsor of that. Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. My apologies to the body. I was ready but not listening. Something that happens around here from time to time. Mr. Majority Whip, we Americans are an interesting group. Like all people, we hate taxation of any kind. Political fortunes and careers have been won and lost by the enactment or the forgiveness of tax. We all know, however, right here, that the exemption of a tax is a much easier thing to do than the imposition of one. However, each year, we increase the size and cost of our government with the creation of boards, commissions, the ever-increasing cost of education, taking care of the less than average wage earner, providing for the poor, on and on. Wyoming people pay less per capita in personal tax than almost every other state. Interestingly enough, we demand a lot more from our state and local governments. Some of that neutrality coming from we have the money, albeit much of it provided from mineral wealth. So let's use that money to pay for our wants and needs of today. Wyoming's residents pay state and local taxes by generally three methods, one of them being the sales tax, statewide in most counties combining a total rate of somewhere between 4 and 6%. The only inflation built into that is combined to the cost of goods and some services increasing in value. Motor fuels tax play an important part of our tax plan, but all of that is used for the maintenance and construction of our roadways. Most of us pay about 25% of our personal costs to our roadways, thanks mainly to mineral wealth paying for a large percentage of that share, too. Property tax, however, is more local than the other forms of tax that we pay. Much of it is used to fund the costs of education, but again, mineral wealth pays most of those costs aside from what we pay. Property tax pays for our streets, some utilities, fire, police, community colleges, most of the things that that we ask for and use on a daily basis. Is property tax as inflationary as sales tax? Generally speaking, it follows the appraisal value of real and personal property. That means that the more your asset is worth, the more you owe in property tax. Is it unfair? It is interesting that we Americans will complain one minute about escalating property tax and smile at our good fortune a few minutes later, knowing that our asset has done very well. Are the sponsors of this proposal being irresponsible or wanting to harm the tax base of our counties and our state? Absolutely not. Noticing the areas and the districts that they represent, without doubt, many of the more rapidly appreciating property values in the state. Their sponsorship of this bill is in response to complaints of double-digit assessment increases in their areas and tax rates in recent years. I don't blame them for bringing it. Normally, I don't like to show concern over a policy shift like this without having another proposal for consideration. However, I cannot come up with another methodology that maintains equity and fairness in all classes of property, such as what we have now. However, the reverse could be asked. What will replace the lost revenues in the counties and the funding of our educational system that we receive from property tax? I could say, though, that what is being proposed here may appear benign. The long-term potential and the consequences could be potentially very serious. We could end up with 23 or more variations of property tax plans. Nothing equitable about that. We could allow future legislatures, I'm sorry, Mr. Majority Whip, I would like to move third reading amendment number one to House Joint Resolution 6. We can end up with 23 or more variations of property tax plans, nothing equitable about that. We could allow future legislatures to stop any growth in the rates or slow the inflationary rates of property tax by doing this. If we can only put the brakes on our educational expense or the ever-increasing costs of state and or county governments as easily as stopping or slowing tax increases, that would make sense. Will we see a referendum proposal? Maybe. Probably. Should this happen, we need to ask the residents of our state how high they would like to have their sales tax go just to make up for the difference. This is an emotional issue in many parts of our state. To have one's property tax increased to the point of unaffordability on a piece of property being held by multiple generations is an emotional issue and tantamount to simply taking the money and run, which is what many people have to do, simply sell the properties that have been in their families for many generations because they can no longer afford to pay the property tax on those properties. It is not forcing people out. Conscious decisions and alternatives exist, all some of them, some people find them very, well, less than palatable. Is it possible that the present surplus or present system works? Are there some inherent unfairness in the Constitution? Is life intended to be fair? Or is it intended to be equitable? Perhaps what we have currently, the present system, is best for the common good. Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. And I will withdraw the amendment at the appropriate time.
Representative Reese.
Mr. Speaker, this is a targeted bill. It's targeted at those people that actually own homes, and especially at those that own high-value homes. It does nothing to help the lowest-income members of our society, those who can't even afford to scrape together the down payment on a house. They're the renters. This bill doesn't do anything to help them. So it's a targeted bill. It's if you own a home, possibly one of the biggest assets you have for a lot of people, and the bigger the asset, the more this bill helps you. If you want to help people, let's do it with something that helps all the people, not just those that have high-value assets like very large and expensive homes.
Representative Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip, for the amendment against the resolution. Many of us will remember a year or so ago when a former colleague of ours from the northwestern part of the state got up before us and created a visual image for us about a parade of people that were leaving her community, and she eloquently described the situation that our good speaker is trying to present to us also in this resolution. I think we all understand what the concern is, but members of the body, I'm not sure that the form of this resolution would be the proper answer to that concern. In Article 15, Section 11, where it talks in our Constitution, it talks about the uniformity of assessments for our property. The three areas that we have right now are gross production of minerals, industrial, and rural, and all other property, real and personal. And I think it's very easy to develop a fair and equitable system of taxation within those three groups. I mean, minerals compared to industrial, I don't think we have any problem between these classes of trying to maintain what's provided in our Constitution, that the assessment will be uniform in these three classes. But this resolution proposes that we develop another class of subclass, if you will, of assessment property in the area of rural and personal residential property, and it requires that the legislature, or suggests that the legislature, will determine the maximum amount of any ad valorem tax that will be collected. It also prescribes restrictions upon the increase of the rate of taxation or assessment, and it creates another subclass of residential property. And I think that is a very difficult thing to try to make political decisions in this body, how we're going to accomplish that. What mechanism are we going to use to decide what is the maximum amount of tax that we put on certain subclass of property? We don't have that problem now. We do a uniform assessment all the way across the state. A home in northeastern part of the state that's valued at $300,000 will have exactly the same assessment on it as a home in any other part of the state. But now we've created, at least we're proposing to create, another subclass of residential property, and I'm very concerned about how we're going to make those very important decisions in keeping with the spirit of our Constitution and trying to be uniform and fair. Is how we're going to set aside another class and say, you know, these people are special, or these people have certain concerns that no one else in the state has. So I think that's a very concerning for me to think that this body would want to go down that road. One of the things that was talked about in the committee, the whole, in the presentation of this resolution, was that we would go out in time. I think the year of 07 was used, and at that point we would set the property tax at some level at that point and not change it for a number of years until the property was sold. And as a former one of the former speakers on this resolution mentioned, is speaking from the voice of county government, for example. If we consider that people in this country change residence about every 10 years, and we would set in time a fixed assessment on a house and wait for 10 years until that property was sold, what happens in those intervening years to the revenue flow to cities, towns, and counties? A road grader right now for a road and bridge crew is about $200,000, and in 10 years it'll probably be $250,000. Salaries for our elected officials could be $35,000 now, or whatever it is. You know, over a period of 10 years, those are going to go up. So we're going to have a revenue shortfall here that we're going to have to meet, and I'm not sure how we're going to do that, and I'm not sure that we should try to put that burden on our cities, towns, and counties. I think we all understand the targeted problem that we have here. I'm not sure what the solution is. But I'm not sure this is the right word either. Thank you.
Dr. Miley?
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I wanted to get up and speak on this bill primarily because it's not a medical bill, and I wanted to let people know that there are other areas in this. I would like to say that the people who bring this bill forward, I admire them greatly. I am delighted that they're doing this, and I know the reason why they're doing that. Let me just say that since I've been in the legislature, we had, not too many years ago, went through a very painful process of trying to develop a uniform system of assessments of property in the state of Wyoming. And there was a lot of controversy with it, and we went through a lot of gnashing of teeth and so forth to get that done. And that was to put into place a system that was felt to be fair and equitable statewide. And part of the reason why we did that was to get away from the very thing that I think this proposition or this resolution brings to the forefront again. And what happens is if this opens the door for future legislators to put into place property taxes in their area that is favorable to them. And I'm not sure that we should be doing that. I have talked with some of our county officials, and at least in my county here, the officials that I've talked to are against this resolution and against the change in the assessment of property. So for whatever that's worth, I pass that on to you. And thank you, Mr. Majority Whip.
Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I just want to start out with I did a lot of door-to-door this last time in the campaign, and I'll tell you, nothing's quite as eye-opening as that. And I purposefully set aside quite a bit of time to do that, and I would ask people, how's the state of Wyoming doing? And I'll tell you, if you ask somebody a question like that door-to-door, you better be ready to sit there and listen to the answer, stand there and listen to the answer. And time after time again, one of the main concerns of the people up in my part of the state were, these property taxes are hurting us. These property taxes, I'm worried about these property taxes. And so here's the scenario. 6 or 7 years ago, they opened up their property tax bill, and it's 10% higher than what it was the last year. The next year, they open up their property tax bill, and it's 25% higher than what it was the previous year. The next year, they open it up, and maybe it's 14% higher. The next year, they open it up, and it might be 28% higher. Now, these are people who have bought properties. Area encompasses a lot of country as well as part of this town of Sheridan. And I started purposefully out in the country doing the door-to-door because as the weather got cooler, I thought, you know, it's nicer to move into town where it's a little warmer and there's more trees. And that worked out pretty well. And so at first I thought, well, maybe this is a country issue because the houses oftentimes were modular houses. They, when they bought those houses maybe 10 or 12 years ago, I'm guessing that they were 140,000 maybe. Now they probably appraised for twice of that. But what's really hurting them out there in the country is that the land values have gone up so much. It used to be that an acreage, was several thousand dollars an acre, and now we're seeing five-acre plots going for $100,000. So then I also started looking, well, who are these people? And they're just the people that have been in the community a long time. They're everything from, like, retired school teachers. One of them who I spent the most time was a retired shop teacher. But there were people that worked in the shops and people that had businesses. And they had bought their properties a number of years ago. And now they're on a fixed income. But then it wasn't just those people. It was a lot of people who were working people, too. It was people that worked on the railroad. It was people that worked in town. It's people that, just your working class people. So then I went into town and I was doing it, and I kept hearing that. We're worried. Our tax rates are going up so much every year. Yes, we can still afford our taxes now, but how long is it going to be before we're going to be forced to sell our home so that we can, and move into something less, so that we can have our lifestyle, and they, you know, there wasn't giant motor homes out there or anything. So I wanted to relate that story because the impression that was given from a good minority leader is it's not just high value homes. The high value homes, they have, you know, they've started out paying a high value, and it's not an issue with them. One of the things that this bill does is it gives the legislature the ability, just gives us the potential to look at different systems. We're representing the people of Wyoming, and the people are asking us, why can't you at least have that ability to have that discussion among yourselves that you can look at different ways to tax residences? Those basic, that basic thing in everybody's life, shelter. Why can't you have the ability to look at that and perhaps tax that a little differently? You know, we heard one scenario where you might rebase the house when it's sold or something. I don't think that we're not that concerned about that in Sheridan County. I'll tell you one thing we'd like just to see that maybe property taxes could only go up 10% a year. If there was just a cap on how much property tax could go up every year, most of you'd have a heart attack if your taxes went up 10% a year as far as you could see, but at least that would be predictable, and there would be a time when the value of your house, I doubt if any property ever going to continue to go 10% a year increase in value forever. So there could be a time at least when, after a number of years of it going up 10%, where the property values would level out and you wouldn't see that increase again. But the erratic, frightening increases from year to year that people experience that creates that uncertainty in their lives is all that's being asked for in this proposal. So for the bill and against the amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. And I won't be vaporless. This is an argument that other than you that were elected this last year have heard before. But this is what we've largely heard. Due to our absolutely insatiable appetite to grow government at either the state or local level, we are going to put it on the backs of the residential property owners. That's what you've heard. We've heard that Wyoming people don't, you know, if have an opportunity, they won't want to pay taxes. I disagree. Wyoming people have always stood up and been willing to pay their fair share of tax. The problem comes in when it's an unfair tax, when it seems an unreasonable tax. When you open up your property tax assessment and see double-digit increases, not just 1 year, but 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, and you haven't even bothered to paint your house. Your value has not gone up in your mind one iota. Why? It's because of the way we use to determine the value of property. This proposal, if you'll take the time to read it, doesn't say we have to change the way we're going to change. It does not say we're going to change using full assessed value of property. I believe that will always be the case. What it allows is a future legislature to control the rates of increases. And I've done it myself, so I can understand. If there's something you're against, what do you do? Oh, this is going to go haywire. It's going to go wrong. We're going to do everything. We're going to lose all the money in the world. We don't know that. We don't know that. If a future legislature did decide to start at a certain assessed value and then threw in an inflation factor, we don't know what's going to be lost. When we offer a tax break to the ag industry, rather it would be bull semen, rather it be the oats, whatever it is, rather it be equipment, and I have supported each and every one of them, do we start wondering and worrying how we're going to backfill that? No. When we offer a tax break to the minerals industry, because they're hurting, because prices are low, and I have supported every one of those, do we start wringing our hands about how we're going to backfill that? No. The answer is because we know if you have more money in your pocket, you're going to invest in Wyoming. The same is true for probably the largest class of taxpayers we have, which are the residential property owners. If they have more money in their pocket, they're going to reinvest it back in their property, in their community, and through sales tax. We may not have the loss. I took some offense that there was indicated that this was for the rich, those with the large property. Those that are rich can afford the increase. If you come in and put in a $10 million home, it's going to be nothing for you to pay double-digit increases in your property tax. You probably lose more money than that out of your wallet getting out of your car. In fact, I'm guessing you can probably find more money than that in their couch cushions. And I'm willing to look. This country was based upon a taxation system, but a taxation system that treated people fairly. I heard the worry. I heard that, oh, because we insist on the way we do in the Constitution, that means that all property is treated equally across the state. I beg to differ. A two-bedroom house, one bathroom, carport, is going to be valued very differently in areas of western, northern, and southern Wyoming than it's going to be in eastern Wyoming, central Wyoming. Same house. You could even have the same number of kids and a dog. I don't care. You're going to find that that's going to be valued very differently. So it isn't equal across the state. We've heard a lot about, again, the fear of what the legislature can do. But let's again talk about this tax. And I'll use it for the last time probably you'll ever get to hear me on this. When most people pay taxes, they have a reasonable expectation of what they're going to pay. And let's use the widgets. I love widgets. You go to the store, you buy a widget. It costs X amount of dollars. You can figure the sales tax on it. You go to the cash register, you pay it, you know you're going to pay sales tax. However, if you buy property, you do know what you pay for it. You go to the cash register, you not only pay what you thought you were going to pay, but you pay taxes based upon what somebody else thought that widget was worth. And not only that, after you get your widget home, you continue to pay taxes on it for what you think, what other people think it is worth. You have very little, if any, control over that. In the other areas we've dealt with, again, ag, minerals, your normal business, when you're faced with the tax that you have trouble paying, most times you can push that price on. You can ask the people that buy the product to pay more. It happens in utilities, it happens in the minerals industry. That is the usual way that people are able to afford tax increases, is they push it on to the consumer. A residential property owner cannot do that. It is difficult to sell a slice of your property. It is difficult to sell the basement. You're unable to do that. So, the other argument becomes, well, but look at the great value you have in your asset. Absolutely right. And when you sell that asset, you ought to be taxed at the full value or whoever buys it. Absolutely. There's no question about that. I've heard that, well, all we're doing is delaying the inevitable. Absolutely. If I can keep, or we as a legislature can keep, a traditional Wyoming family in their home for another generation, it's worth it. A half a generation. I think it's worth it. So once again, members of Mr. Majority Whip, we sit here and we say, we know it probably isn't perfect, we know it isn't right across the state, but we refuse to do anything about it. And that isn't it exactly true, because in reality, the legislature has made great efforts in some areas. We've provided a tax deferral system. We've provided an opportunity that your estate can pay the tax if you're unable to. We provided a way that if you are economically stressed below a certain economic level, that the state will actually come in and backfill a portion of all of those property taxes. Again, those are band-aids. Those are symptoms. They're telling us there is a problem. But we're refusing to address a better way, a more fair way, to tax a residential property. Can I say there won't be a loss? No. But certainly in the areas where there's high value, and that value is getting higher every year, there's likely to be a more rapid turnover in property. And once again, if the future legislature decides that every time the property changes hands, it's going to be assessed and taxed at that full value, there will not be that much loss. There may be some in the gap, but we don't know that. There may be another way to address that. And finally, we see that referendums are very popular in some parts of the country. The article you looked at earlier, I think, mentioned four different referendums. But generally, if there is a tax referendum, what issue is it on? Residential property tax. And once those referendums have taken place, rather it be in the large state, you know, on the coast, rather it be in the state immediately to our south, those referendums have been much more onerous and burdensome than when you let we, legislators, decide how to do it. It is a policy choice. It's a big choice. You've heard this before. I appreciate your time and urge you to not support the amendment and support the resolution. At a minimum, I just love giving this last one. Let the voters decide. Haven't we heard that this last year? Let the voters decide.
Representative Hageman.
Mr. Majority Whip, I think he was trying to talk long enough that I wouldn't remember what I got up here to talk about. So we have gone through this battle before. I was here when the Supreme Court ruled that we could only have one tier of taxation. Before that, we had tiers of taxation for houses and for agriculture and several other things, and the Supreme Court ruled that we could only have one tier, and we fought that thing through, and we set up three tiers, one for houses and agriculture, and one for industrial equipment and so on, and we did set up the three tiers. And it was our worry at that time that there would be an effort made to keep on creating different tiers. But even if we do set up different tiers, there still has to be some kind of a system to set the valuation on that property. And where our problem is way back after schools were equalized, and way back 20 years ago or whatever it was, we tried to make it so that all property was taxed equally across the state, because it had to be in order to equalize funding for schools. And at that time, each county kind of set their own value on property. I remember a lot in Jackson was $30 a year taxation, and in Torrington it was several times that much. And so in order to set an equal way of doing it, we set that every time you sell a piece of property, it has to be reported to the county assessor. And so when the property is taxed at its comparative value with houses property around you. And even if we set up different tiers of taxation, we're still going to have some kind of a system of setting that value. I think the shortcut and the best way to do it would be just simply to, through the statutes, change the way that we set the property value. Maybe we don't have to use comparative sales. Maybe there's other ways to do it. Because even if we pass this with the different tiers of taxation, you're still going to have comparative sales or something to do it. And my point is that if you want to do it, there's a shortcut through the statute that could probably be a lot faster, and it would settle the problems we're going to have anyway when we do this. So I'm speaking against this amendment. I guess I've been through the battle so many times, but I still can't see, even if we do set several different tiers, and we do have three tiers now, that we still have to have some kind of a system. It's going to have to be comparative sales or something, and I don't see how we'll ever get around that part of it, even if we have different tiers.
Representative Latta.
Thank you. A couple of things I just wanted to mention, and our fine gentleman, our speaker, covered things very well. The value of a two-bedroom house that is in maybe the western part of the state, and the value of a two-bedroom house that's maybe over in the Torrington part of the state, probably a lot different. The value when that house sells in the next 60 days, probably going to be a lot different. So I don't think it can be equalized. I don't think we can sit here and talk that one is the same as the other. They're not. And until we can, if we're going to equalize things, let's equalize the value of the houses. Let's equalize the value of the property. That would be a good trick. See how we can do that. But the one thing I did want to bring up, for every dollar of taxes that is spent on you and your constituents and everybody in Wyoming, you pay about 48 cents. Every dollar that is spent on it. The rest of it is paid through minerals or some other tax. It is not paid by you. you are paying 48 cents and you're spending a dollar. And yet here we're talking about freezing taxes. I think this is a dangerous road to go down. I would urge you to support the amendment.
Representative McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. I'd like to appoint this or point this discussion in a little bit different direction. Probably the largest beneficiary, or where it drives the most money from property tax, schools. And because of the Supreme Court, we have what they call the cost of living adjustment that we have to do for our schools. And the number one thing that drives this cost of living index in the state of Wyoming is property values. So the highest property value areas in the state, we pay at least $8 million a biennium more to equalize salaries so they can hire teachers and afford, teachers can afford to live there. The places that where property values that were described earlier, the same house doesn't have the same kind of property value, those districts actually take a loss in the amount of money from the funding model. So I guess what I'm up here to say is schools are the main beneficiary of our property tax system. And if we put off the paying of that property tax for a period of time, as has been suggested, what are we going to do to get the money to fund our schools? Are we going to have to tax something else on and against the resolution?
Representative Eichel.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. It's impossible for me not to get up on this, and I apologize for taking more time. It is such an issue in our part of the country in the shadow of the sunsetting shadow of the Bighorns. We don't share that with everybody in the state, not only the beauty, but we don't share the problem with the property tax issue. This is really more likely to help those who are on fixed incomes, those who are retired, they have their house as an asset, maybe a 74 Ford or something, and do not have other ways of meeting the double-digit increases. And we've tried numerous approaches to this problem. And we've tried to make it in such a way that it is applicable elsewhere or makes sense elsewhere. And it isn't a matter of special treatment, but there's something that must be able to be done about this. We have worked with the assessors all across the state, the county assessors meeting in Johnson County a couple of years ago, and met with them, our delegation from the two counties, and worked with them about ways to approach this. The formula for setting taxes on property, on residential property, is complex and practically unexplainable. And maybe there's something that can be done about that. So, it's true that there are different circumstances across the state. We need a fix to this, and it's something that's not shared with everybody, and it only exists in 3 to 5 areas across the state at a time. We have not been able to remedy it by statute. We have not been able to remedy it by proposing constitutional amendments. This one looks like it will allow us to, if it would pass the people's vote, that would open the constitutional door, and that would lead to us being able to do something about it statutorily, not automatically, not in an unfair way, not in a way which goes without our scrutiny as a body for what's fair, for what is not tremendously in disparity across the state, but it would open that door for us to be able to approach it in a different way, and I believe that we need that. Against the amendment, for the bill, thank you.
Representative Escobar.
Mr. Majority Whip, for the amendment and against the bill. And I think when you look at this, when you strip it to its bare essence, you know, it's all about location, location, location. And if you're fortunate enough to live in a certain location and fortunate enough to own property in a certain location, certain values are going to be ascribed to that individual. It's a matter of location. If you live in Colorado or Nebraska, you can take part in the Powerball. If you live in certain parts of Wyoming and you have a certain property, you know, it's an enviable position for many people. But it seems to me that that to look at a constitutional amendment because of the location of certain individuals is it's just not fair. So I think it's before you become involved in a constitutional change, you have to have a compelling reason. And even though there is a problem, it's a problem many people would love to have. Therefore, I think it's as unfortunate as some people might feel. And they might feel that they're in an unfortunate situation because of the increase in their poverty values, and certainly to sympathize if they have a fixed income. There are some different resolutions, different solutions for a situation like that, which were adequately addressed by one of my previous colleagues, one of my colleagues the day previous. So, Majority Whip, for the amendment against the bill. Thank you.
Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I'm from Johnson County, as most of you know, and easily the biggest issue that I've had with the most of my constituents over the 8 years that I've been in the legislature has been this. We've been unable to do anything to ameliorate the rapid rise of taxes on people's homes. The assessor up there has begged that we do something for, as she puts it, the little old lady that lives on the corner and has been there for 30 years and now can't afford her taxes on her house. There are other problems with the system. We've had a lot of inequalities of assessment. I'm hoping that the new CAMA system will do something about that. But I think we should go ahead with this bill and focus attention on this issue, and hopefully future legislators will be able to figure out how to do that properly. So against the amendment and for the bill.
Mr. Majority Whip, Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. I think the world of the speaker, but the concept is too troublesome here. He has a great deal of passion about this subject, and I give him credit for that. But this is a major tax initiative that we see no interim study on. It ought to be studied because it is a problem, and we talk about it on this floor. And we have task forces and select committees on a variety of things. But we don't really know the impact of this, and we should at least understand that as best we can before we launch off on this. Major initiatives like this and things with such great impact typically have a fairly broad study and more knowledge behind them than three readings in the House.
Second time, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip, and I do appreciate the indulgence of the body, but I would just actually respond to a few. It has been made mention that this would only, and I'll say only, benefit those that can own property. That is a large class of people. And I can make the argument that even those landlords, and landlords are in a better situation than most, If their property tax goes up, they can pass that on, and they do. So I think this does affect more people than just those who own property. You talked a little bit about schools and their need for additional funding. And it was mentioned that many areas that do have a high cost of living get more out of the formula. Well, that's the end of the process. The beginning of the process, they actually put a heck of a lot more into the system. Properties or taxes are collected at the local level, sent to the state, distributed out. If you have a one-bedroom apartment or one-bedroom house valued at $50,000, and the property tax collected from that goes into the school system statewide, and if you have a one-bedroom house valued at $150,000, you're paying a lot more in at the front end. So there certainly is a contribution. We've talked about location, location, location. I would disagree. This is about people, people, people. People on fixed incomes, no matter where they are. People who want to stay in their homes, no matter where they are. People who are struggling because of super high values of their property. And once again, I will not and cannot argue that when that property sold, absolutely, they realize a terrific gain. But if they lose the place where they want to live, will the financial remunerations make up for that? I guess it could. We can move to Arizona. Maybe that would make up for it. So that, again, it said this hasn't been studied. It hasn't been studied. I would say if the people decide that we want to proceed with this, that would be the most logical step, is when we start developing studies to determine how best to implement a better and fair tax. I've heard how we suffered when we did the current Constitution. That may very well be, but if you look, that was in 1988. There aren't many of us here that actually suffered through that. And in reality, I won't be one of you that suffered through it again, should this pass. But I'd hope that I have faith in this body and future bodies that there is a better way to do what we are doing.
For your second time, Representative Eichel.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. We have two keys. And the first key is the ability to open this up with a constitutional amendment represented in this House Joint Resolution. And if that key isn't opening the door, we can't use the statutory key. We can't figure how to approach these things any more than, if you agree with this, that it resembles Amendment D. And we were told, and some of us held the view, that it was pretty fruitless talking about this in the legislature if the people didn't allow for this to be approached. In this bill, the people would be allowing for it to be approached. And then we would look at all the ways in which we might do that, as it's been said before, including study. So I ask you to let us use the first key, and at least see if the people want to exercise that key, so that maybe we can do something about this. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Whip. You know, my respect for the speaker is probably as great as anyone's. You know, we share a lot in common, including girth, height, and hairlines. We also share a common care for the people of the state we serve. And this issue has the ability to say, who shall we take from and who shall we give to? And by doing this, we could end up with a couple of, well, some winners on one side and certainly some losers on the other. This is a wonderful document that you all have. We live by it here in this room and in this state and in our lives. Article 15, Section 11 says uniformity of assessment required all property except as in this Constitution otherwise provided, and that's what's being suggested here, shall be uniformly valued at its full value as defined by the legislature. Down below that, in subset B, all taxable property shall be valued at its full value as defined by the legislature. On over to subset C, the legislature shall not create new classes or subclasses or authorize any property to be assessed at a rate other than the rates set for authorized classes. Some pretty wise people put that together, and undoubtedly there are some wise people here in this room, certainly wiser than myself. But you know, Wyoming's property tax plan is based entirely on valuation, as appraised by your county assessor. By approving this plan, this system, you would be saying, we'll stick with the original plan and we'll tax minerals at 100% of value. We do that today. The reason is, once it's pulled out of the ground, you're never going to see it again. It's used, it's expended, turned into something else, generally motor fuel or natural gas or something, and we should get 100% of the value of that product as it belongs to we the people. We will continue to tax industrial property at about 11, as it says right now, about 11% of its value. That way you're assured that you will get somewhere around 100% of the value of that property over say, a 9 or 10 year period. We will continue to tax real property, such as your automobile and things like that, at declining values or appreciating values on an annual basis, based on what it's worth at some point each year. But what we're saying here, then, is if we approve this, if we adopt this, and if the people approve it and adopt it into our Constitution, with respect to residential property, that what will we have future legislatures determine? Will they determine where subclasses will be? Will we want to forgive all property tax for those that simply cannot afford to pay their bill, or those, for example, on a fixed income? And keep in mind, and I mean nothing harmful towards folks in that category, I was brought up that way, but you know, we all deserve and demand certain things of our government, the state government, federal government, county government, city government, and those folks share in those services just as much as anybody else does, should they not pay their fair share. The system does work best when we all participate in both the receipt of those amenities and the payment of them. Who will get a better rate and where? Could it depend on the skill of your representative to the legislature? Will future legislatures set the maximum amount of property tax? It's in the bill. They could say, you know, that your property tax will not increase next year or the next 5 years or the next 10 years, simply because we're currently sitting on a pile of mineral wealth, or we've had a huge surplus return from the federal government because we sold a little more coal or something. Imagine enough public pressure before a future legislature, particularly in times of mineral wealth, to simply say something like, we have $1 billion surplus, why can't I have my share in a reduced property tax? That could be considered. Will future legislatures set out how slow or fast the rates of property tax will increase, regardless of value? You may be sitting on a home that's worth $100,000, and in 5 years' time it could increase to $200,000, and yet your property tax would remain the same. Not a bad idea. I mean, I'd even appreciate it myself for this. I just wonder how responsible that is for the people that receive that money that we tax ourselves in the form of property tax. Will those same legislatures have the political will to consider increases in other forms of tax, sales and use of motor fuels, to replace the lost revenue? You've seen it here in action. That's very, very difficult to do. It's been my experience that probably will not happen. If the people of Wyoming ask for an Alaska-style rebate, should we grant that wish? You know, we are the gatekeepers. We are here to do the work of the people, and sometimes that's a very, very difficult thing to do. To do what is best for the long-term financial condition of the state, even though it's not very popular, is the job we're being asked to do many, many times. The increases in the values of our properties have seen some incredible jumps lately. Why is that? Let's look back and see why. We can blame other people for it. Why does it cost 10 times more to buy a 2x4 or a 4x4 now than it did before we preserved the spotted owl or the snail darter? Not to say they're not important, but that's the reason, some of it, why things cost as much as they do. Why do building materials cost 10 times more than they did just 10 or 15 years ago? You can blame it on some lawsuit or some abuse of the court system, but that's the way life is, folks. That's the way. That's what drives costs up. Blame it on who you want to, but the values continue to go up. Whatever it is, the value of your asset has increased, and under the current system, you pay based on that value under Wyoming's Constitution and our laws. There are two things in life that are most definite and most assured, and one of them Both of them, and neither one is the lottery. I rambled on long enough, Mr. Majority Whip. I think it's time to say whether we appreciate and approve this, and I do. I appreciate the sponsors of this. I commend them for what they're trying to do for their people, and I really hope that someday some future legislature will come up with a solid plan to keep people in their homes, particularly in those that have lived on home sites for 3 and 4, maybe more generations, and they just simply cannot find a way to pay the property tax on that property. Mr. Majority Whip, I withdraw my amendment, and I call for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Majority House Leader. The amendment has been withdrawn by the sponsor. We're back on the resolution. Is there any more discussion on resolution number 6? Question having been called. Fellow representatives, we have heard the excellent debate on House Joint Resolution 6. We had question called. We're ready for the vote. I'd like to remind the body this is a proposed constitutional amendment. For it to pass the House, it must have an affirmative 2/3 vote. House Joint Resolution, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall a resolution pass? Chief Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Barnard. Berger. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Ewells. Childers. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Davison. Dirks. Edwards. Escobel. Gay. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hageman. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Hastert. Hinckley. Eichel. Illaway. Jackson. Jones. Jorgensen excused. Landon. Latta. Lockhart. Lubno. Martin. McComey. Miley. Miller. Morgan. Olson. Osborne. Pedersen. Peterson. Philp. Powers. Warburg. Mr. Minority Floor Leader. Robinson. Samuelson. Semlich. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Slater. Thompson. Walsh. Warren. Wasserberger. Watt. White. Swanitzer. Mr. Speaker. I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 20 ayes. 39 noes, 1 excused.
House Joint Resolution, having failed to receive 2/3 affirmative vote, that the members have elected to the House of Representatives has failed to pass the House. Chairman Landman.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor. Please proceed. I just thought that after enjoying that debate and everybody thinking about things so much, that I am really proud of this legislature. I wanted to share with you just a little. I just got an email from a friend that said this is off the AP from Richmond, Virginia. Virginians who wear their pants so low their underwear shows may want to think about investing in a stronger belt. The state's House of Delegates passed a bill Tuesday authorizing a $50 fine for anyone who displays his or her underpants in a lewd or indecent manner.
Thank you, Chairman Lannan. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Majority Whip, I just talked to the Speaker. The Majority Floor Leader has to come in at 3 in the morning to prepare for the operation. The rest of us that voted no have to come in at 4.
Thank you for that tidbit, Chairman Childers. The House will stand at ease for just a correction. Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Whip. Ladies and gentlemen, let me ask first, may I have privilege of the floor?
Please proceed.
Sorry, I assumed. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to present today to you the Goshen County summary. Very nice. Goshen County is county number 7, and we have a 3-member board of commissioners consisting of Lloyd Peterson, Ross Newman, and Robert Ward, and I'll introduce a third of our commissioners here at the end of this. Goshen County has an assessed valuation of, are you ready for this? A whopping $93 million. Goshen County was established in 1911 and the courthouse built in Torrington, the county seat, and dedicated in 1913. The size of the county is 2,225 square miles with a population as of the 2000 census of 12,538 people. County is home to 8 cities and towns, Torrington with a population of 5,776, Lingle 510, LaGrange 332, Fort Laramie 243, and Yoder 169, along with Veteran, Hawk Springs, and Huntley. Fort Laramie, located west of Torrington, was reputed to be the most important post between the Mississippi River and the West Coast. It was also a very important stop on the Pony Express route. Goshen County is the largest agricultural county in the state. The valley has been agriculturally oriented for decades primarily because of the favorable climate and the vast network of irrigation canals which have been dug in the area. Potatoes, beans, corn, wheat, alfalfa, sugar beets, and even grapes are among the crops that we produce in Goshen County. More than 200,000 cattle are raised and marketed in Goshen County, which makes it the leading beef producer in the state. The local livestock auction, of course, is the largest in the state, the 5th largest in the entire United States. We have an ethanol plant south of Torrington that produces a lot of local value-added products. Our public schools in the county are widely acclaimed for their excellence and are supported by the Eastern Wyoming Colleges with a wide curriculum and advanced studies and various hands-on skills. Might add Southeast School in Yoder, that population 169, was designated a blue ribbon school as part of No Child Left Behind. We in Goshen County do not share in the vast mineral resources as do many of the state's counties. However, we in Goshen County have a capital facilities tax, have had one for 16 years, and in the last election passed the 5th penny. We subscribe to a help yourself attitude and do what we can to help ourselves. If the legislature could do one thing for us, it would be to help resolve the uncertainty of our future revenue funding. We see optimistic signs of that happening in this session and applaud the forward thinking of our legislators. Citizens deserve to benefit from the vast mineral resources in the great state of Wyoming. And I would like to present to you a third, like I said, of our county commissioners, Mr. Ross Newman in the North Gallery.
Welcome to the House of Representatives. Back on the order of business of bills on third reading and final passage, House Joint Resolution 9.
House Joint Resolution Number 9, introduced by Representative Hageman, a joint resolution relating to state involvement in federal resource management, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Joint Resolution 9 being read 3 separate times. The question is, shall the resolution pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Alden? Alden? Anderson? Bagby? Barnard? Berger? Brechtel? Brown? Buchanan? Ewells? Childers? Mr. Majority Floor Leader? Davison? Dirks? Edwards? Escobel? Gay? Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hageman,
Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Hastert, Hinckley, Eichel, Illaway, Jackson, Jones, Jorgensen excused, Landon, Latta, Lockhart, Lubnow, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp, Powers, Forberg, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlick, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Swanitzer, Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
House Joint Resolution 9, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of members of those elected to the House, House Joint Resolution 9 has passed the House. Next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 11.
House Joint Resolution Number 11, introduced by Representative Davison, a joint resolution requesting Congress to recognize past local expenditures for a match for flood control feasibility study in the Bear River Basin being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Joint Resolution 11 being read three separate times. The question is, should the bill pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Barnard. Berger. Bechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Buells. Childers. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Davison. Dirks. Edwards. Escobel. Gay. Gilmore. Gingery, Goggles, Hageman, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Hastert, Hinckley, Eichel, Illaway, Jackson, Jones, Jorgensen excused, Landon, Latta, Lockhart, Lubnow, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp, Powers, Forberg, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlick, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Swanitzer, Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
House Joint Resolution, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of those elected to the House, House Joint Resolution has passed. The 11 has passed the House. Next bill for our consideration is House Bill 201.
House Bill 201, introduced by Representative Dirks and Act relating to Crime Victim Services Providers Funding, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 201, and there is an amendment, third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 201. Representative Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move a third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 201. I have talked with the main proponent of 201, and I believe this is a friendly amendment. He doesn't think it is. But what this amendment does, it simply excludes the 1st and 7th Judicial Districts, as you can read the amendment, from seeking funding from the Crime Victim Services through the state budget, or through the Victim Services as it is, and says they have to do this through the state budgeting process or other appropriate means. This will do one of two things. The two district attorney's offices will have to go through the appropriations in their biennial budget and say, look, we need this service outside of the Victim Services. We need this in our office. They have to come to appropriations. They'll have to make their argument for or against an appropriation to vote it up and down. And our offices, or at least those two offices, this is something that they think is important enough for them to do for the budgetary process. I think it also does something else, too. It frees up the other
frees up that money to the other 21 counties. This is at least two districts or two counties they don't have to give the money to. So on and for the amendment.
First time, Representative Dirks.
Mr. Speaker, I agree with what the representative from Lemhi County said. I would point out that this, should this bill go through and pass the Senate, it would create times when the Appropriations Committee will have to deal with the subject in two separate areas, both through the division and through the two district attorney offices. But all these people are serving victims. They're all doing good work. I urge passage.
Any other discussion on the amendment? We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 201. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. Amendment is carries. House Bill 201, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Barnard. Berger. Drexel. Brown. Buchanan. Ewells. Childers. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Davison. Dirks. Edwards. Escobel. Gay. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hageman. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Hastert. Hinckley. Eichel. Eichel. Gilloway, Jackson, Jones, Jorgensen excused, Landon, Latta, Lockhart, Lubno, Martin, McComey, Miley, Miller, Morgan, Olson, Osborne, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp, Powers, Forberg, Mr. Minority Floor Leader, Robinson, Samuelson, Semlich, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, Slater, Thompson, Walsh, Warren, Wasserberger, Watt, White, Zwanitzer, Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Alden, aye to no. Bechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Vote is closed. 54 ayes, 5 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 201, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of those members elected to the House, House Bill 201 has passed the House. Representative Eichel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may.
Thank you. Fellow associates, from Sheridan City, we have with us up in the South Gallery the person who's been the Director of Fire and Emergency Services for the last 25 years. He's frequently and on an annual basis for at least a week every time enjoying it. And effective, been here on behalf of those types of services for the state, and he's just retired, and I'd like to introduce Bob Simmons.
We're now in that order of business of final passage of HB 308, House Bill 308.
House Bill 308, introduced by Representative Osborne, an act relating to methamphetamine and other controlled substances, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 308, and there is third reading amendment number 1, Representative Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 308. And what this essentially does, it deletes the Miley Amendment, which took out the funding on second reading, and then puts that paragraph back in, and then deletes that paragraph, and then places in, you should be have before you a corrected copy to the third reading
And essentially what that will do, Mr. Speaker, is it will appropriate $2 million from the general fund to the Department of Family Services for parenting skills. And this is a continuation of the Triple P program that was started actually in 2003. The Triple P program has, it comes to Wyoming actually from Queensland, Australia, and it has some excellent research behind it. It seeks to go out and train Wyoming people. So far they have trained about 600 people in our state, many of them from guidance counselors from schools and also from my school. It's free training, and there are actually five levels of training that people can receive. So it continues this program, and it is an expense of $2 million, and that is going to be appropriated from the general fund. Then at line 20, paragraph B, there is hereby appropriated a $500,000 from the school foundation fund for healthy living, healthy learning programs. And some of you may have heard of this program. It started in Macomb, Mississippi by a doctor by the name of Pat Cooper, and he has he actually spoke to the Wyoming Heritage Foundation this last conference. It is an excellent program. We do have a number of schools that are actually pilot schools for that, and that is Sheridan County School District number 2, Converse number 1, Fremont 14 and Fremont 25, Park number 1 and Park 16. So that would be $500,000 for that particular program. And then also, Mr. Speaker, on line 32, paragraph C, there is $500,000 for drug-free schools programs from the School Foundation Fund for alternative schools. And we do have some excellent research on that, and I believe my good friend from Sheridan County handed out a handout to the floor. And what this amount of money is targeted directly to students in alternative schools. They have a much higher risk in almost every major, well, not almost every major category, but in every major category. And so we specifically target that money towards those young people who need it the most. And then finally, at line 38, paragraph D, it refers us back to section, the statute 9-2-2702, which is best practices, and best practices is already previously defined in our statutes. So with that, Mr. Speaker, I stand for questions on the amendment. I believe it's an excellent amendment, and it does take some, does require some additional funding, but money that was already in the bill that was taken out yesterday.
Who else for the first time? Representative Warren.
Mr. Speaker, I wanted to ask a question. I'm pretty familiar with all these programs, and they're excellent programs. I mean, they're research-based, they make a difference, and they, I think they even can provide pretty good measurable outcomes. My concern is not about the programs. It's bringing about funding for pretty substantial programs at a fairly last minute. So my primary question, not about the programs, but it's about how are they already funded? And because they already are existing, I believe, and is their funding in trouble, and why now at this point to bring this forward as a request, although I want to emphasize these are excellent programs.
Representative Dillaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for this whole thing, I hope you've all had a chance to look at this handout. If you haven't, I commend it to you. It's probably the spookiest thing I've seen in a long time, and we're not spending enough money to take care of it. So on and for it, we need to get with it and take care of this problem.
For your first time, Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When you leave this fine building and you return to your community and people ask you, what did you do for the kids in our town? What did you do about drugs? You will be able to say that today you voted for this amendment and for this bill. Let me tell you in very simple terms what you are going to be voting for. Number one, you're voting for a proven program that educates parents and gives them positive ways to work with their own kids. We know the most powerful force in the state of Wyoming is parents helping their own children in positive ways. This is a proven program, and the bulk of the money goes to that. The second thing that you'll be supporting is a program that has been proven and works in the schools. And so that's so that the schools and community programs, with a community-wide effort, can address in a positive way once again how to best help these kids, all children, so that they have a positive feeling about themselves and they choose not to do drugs from an early age and throughout their time growing up. And the third thing that you're going to do, and that's what Representative Illaway was referring to, is we're going to target very specifically the at-risk kids in your community. They choose the riskiest behaviors, and there is a program that has been proven to work, and that's where we're going to be putting our money. The question was asked, how can we on the third reading come up with this kind of a proposal? There were a number of us that were concerned about the amount of money in this bill without it being very specifically directed, and so we have been meeting for the last 24 hours trying to come up with our criteria. Were proven programs that we know in Wyoming have already been working, and putting the money where we believe we will get the longest service and the best advantage to our communities. I hope that you will support this amendment.
Representative Harshman. Just very relaxed.
That was mesmerizing debate, I know. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a question for the sponsor again, since we only get to speak twice, and just kind of add to some of those questions, a good representative from Albany. Again, is this ongoing type funding, and it seemed like there was a one-time deal here before, but particularly the first part in paragraph A, the $2 million, is it ongoing? Is it, and really for the whole amendment, is it biennial funding, or is this a one-year deal? And so those are all questions I think we need answered, I guess, before we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Harvey, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the vote goes, Hammonds, Harshman, and Harvey, I guess I'm the next in this sequence to speak on this issue. I'd like to speak just to the Triple P part of this and let you know that I have heard from a lot of people who started the training in Triple P what a wonderful program that they believe this is, and how strongly they felt that they wanted the funding continued so that they could continue to further their education, because even on the lower levels of this education that they had, they were seeing huge amounts of difference being made in the local communities. And I am strongly on and in favor of this amendment. I think this is the best way that we could have strengthened this bill.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and for the amendment, kudos to the prime sponsor of the bill here in the House and the chairman of the Labor Committee, and with his connections and expertise was able to connect us with those people who most understand these problems, I believe, and to craft a solution to what appeared to be an untargeted shotgun approach towards just giving $3 million to education. And I believe that there are three appropriations in this bill. One is to the Department of Health. That's for the fiscal year 05-06, or beginning July 1, 05. One-year funding, I believe, and that's currently at $2 million. The $5 million, I believe, is one-year fund to grant funding. I don't think it reverts. But that's $5 million to prosecuting attorneys and law enforcement through the AG's office. And then $3 million here as described. Yesterday, I indicated that the part of the bill I liked the best was law enforcement and the prosecuting attorney's portion of it. That's no longer the case. This is the portion I liked best now because it is most targeted, and these are best practices, things that we can achieve. I'm sure that the Senate will take a close look at this, and I would hope that at the very least, this money and this money into education and parenting, 6,000 to 10,000 parents per year can be influenced and benefited by that Triple P program. That's fairly amazing for $2 million. So I'd urge your support of the amendment and support of the bill.
Anyone else for the first time? Chairman Phelps.
Mr. Speaker, this is probably all well and good, but I want you to recognize what we're doing here is starting three new programs. And even though that one says it's a one-time bonus payment, or one-time, it says it was from a one-time bonus payment from TANF. So it was federal money that started this program, and now we get to pick it up. The state gets to pick it up. So we start that program. I don't think it'll be one time any of it. I think they'll be back, and it'll be an ongoing program because we very seldom ever do away with the program since I have been in the legislature. Very seldom ever. I don't think you could show me one that we have done away with this session. But methamphetamine's a big problem. So I'm going to leave it up to you. But it's a big problem, and I think people expect us to deal with it. But you also need to recognize that we are cutting into our savings slowly but surely, and this is one more time. And I just wanted you to make this decision seriously and look at it and see if you think it's worth it.
Anyone else for their first time? Or their second time? Questions to be answered. Chairman Mossberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. To my friend from Albany County, the question was why at the last minute, essentially because of the way the bill was written. The bill hit the floor with $3 million in funding, but it did not specify how that funding was to be spent. And then on second reading, we took it out. On third reading, we are specifying exactly what we're going to do with this funding. To my good friend from Natrona County, who has whipped my school so many times, is this ongoing funding? As the good chairman of the Appropriations Committee said, the $2 million in paragraph A is one-time funding. As you know, it's very difficult once a program starts just to discontinue it. However, I do believe that these three paragraphs are some of the most important things that we might do. And I would direct your attention to the handout with the good representative from Sheridan, or Johnson County actually, on the statistics of alternative secondary students. And if you haven't taken a good look at that, I don't want to go over the percentages up before this floor, but you can look at them and see that it's overwhelmingly a risk behavior group that attends alternative schools. So that $500,000 is money well spent. And with that, I believe everybody understands the issue. They understand what the amendment does. And I call the question, Mr. Speaker.
We are voting on third reading amendment number one to House Bill 308. Excuse me. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Amendment carries. House Bill 308, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Barnard. Berger. Rechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Ewells. Childers. Majority Floor Leader. Davison. Dirks. Edwards. Escobel. Gay. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hageman. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Hastert. Hinckley. Eichel. Illaway. Jackson. Jones. Jorgensen excused. Landon. Latta. Lockhart. Lubnow. Martin. McComey. Miley. Miller. Morgan. Olson. Osborne. Pedersen. Peterson. Filth. Powers. Korberg. Mr. Minority Floor Leader. Robinson. Samuelson. Semlich. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Slater. Thompson. Walsh. Warren. Wasserberger. Watt. White. Swanitzer. Mr. Speaker, I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Vote is closed. 56 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 308, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of those elected to the House of Representatives, House Bill 308 has passed the House. House Bill 319.
House Bill 319, introduced by Representative Wasserberger, an act relating to a medical malpractice liability account, be enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 319, we have two amendments that were distributed after we started work on the bill. Those would be third reading amendment number 4 and third reading amendment number 5, and we'll take them in that order. Third reading amendment number 4, I see is rather lengthy. And who could it be? Oh! Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 319. I call for the question. Mr. Speaker, I have tracked the amendment into the bill along with the some of the standing committee amendments that remain, and then the third reading amendment number 3 that we passed earlier today. I'll just walk through the bill with you and tell you, here's what it does. It sets up the excess liability account. And pages 1 and 2, actually page 1 only changes in the introductory paragraph by adding, it provides for a report and authorizing corresponding modifications in a medical liability insurance policy. Then page 3, we've gone here in this amendment to the chunk between $500,000 and $1 million. So the fund's exposure would be $500,000 per settlement or judgment, and that would be from the state account. Page 3 at the bottom, to be qualified to participate, the physician shall, and then we go over to page 4, establish financial responsibility by filing proof with the Attorney General that he is insured by a policy of at least $1 million coverage per occurrence. So we require the physician to have a $1 million policy. We would pay damages, non-economic damages, over $500,000, up to a total of $1 million, and that's where our window there is of 500. We've shrunk the window in this amendment. It's no longer 650,000, it's 500,000. And the physician must provide proof that they have this primary insurance. They need to enter into a written agreement with the state agreeing to practice for no less than 3 years in Wyoming, to notify the Attorney General if a claim is or an action is filed against them, to allow the Attorney General to participate on behalf of the fund in all aspects of the claim, demand or suit, and settlement, and then to continuously maintain the primary insurance coverage as set forth, then to provide medical care to patients qualified under the Medical Assistance and Services Act, and then notify the Attorney General within 15 days if the physician no longer carries primary insurance. Then page 5 in subparagraph B, the state may enter into contracts with any physician practicing under a valid license who's practicing in the state at least 70% of the time. Subparagraph C, the Attorney General shall provide a certificate of participation to each physician who has entered into an agreement under this article and is eligible for coverage under the account. Page 6 at the top, line 9, actually, there's an insertion that reads, the Attorney General shall promulgate rules and regulations as he considers necessary to carry out the purposes of this act. That is a standing committee amendment. That is further bolstered by a provision on later on in the bill that says no payment. This is page 10, line 2. Oh, excuse me. Track that better. But we require the rules and regulations to be promulgated, finally promulgated, before any agreements can be entered into. And actually, that goes to page 6, line 9, right after the language about promulgating rules and regs. I'm sorry about the confusion there. It says, no agreement shall be entered into under this section until final adoption of rules and regulations pursuant to this subsection. We would know what the rules and regs are before we launched off into this program. And the Attorney General has full authority to participate in the case and approve the settlement terms. That's a critical element because the parties will be forced to distinguish between economic and non-economic damages, and certainly the state needs to know what they are paying for and understand that they truly are non-economic damages. The total that the fund would pay for any one physician would be $1 million, regardless of how many claims they had against them. So if they had five claims, they could pay those five claims as long as they were all, the total settlement value of those for non-economic damages was under $1 million. Then any physician who violates the provisions of the agreement on page 8 is liable for repayment of the amounts paid to the account or from the account. On page 9, line 8 or 9, there is a provision. We add a new subparagraph D that gives the Attorney General the right to make payments under this article and reserve the rights to determine coverage and possibly recollect those from the physician if the physician is in fact in default of the agreement. Again, language about non-economic damages and allocation of damages between economic and non-economic damages, and the states shall fully participate in that. And no payment shall be made from the account unless the AG fully participates in all aspects of each claim, demand, or suit, including settlement negotiations and allocation of damages between economic and non-economic damages. And then we strike some language on page 12 and insert some language on page 15 that's a new subsection 4 about an Attorney General annual report to the governor and the legislature. I believe this amendment strengthens House Bill 319, gives it much more definition and specificity, which is required. and I would urge your support of the amendment. If we are to move this bill along through the process, we will need this amendment to at least gain my vote to House Bill 319. And we certainly will have other, I would anticipate having another vote on this bill beyond our third reading vote today. If it makes it out of the Senate, we would certainly have a conference report to look at and to determine where we might go from there. This is a potential assistance to physicians who are faced with higher premiums. It is anticipated that premiums would go down. The Wyoming Healthcare Commission did commission an actuarial study about projected liability costs for non-economic damages for state-funded excess liability coverage. And what they looked at was the expected liability costs between that $350,000 and $1 million range. I have a copy of that. What I see, expected fund costs and full future value for 2005 was $1.7 million. 2006 was $1.823 million, and 2007 was $1.937 million. The expected average cost for physician per physician ranged from $2,075 in 2005 to $2,288 in 2007. And as you've heard in other readings of this bill and other amendments, this liability can continue for quite some time. So it's difficult to sunset the fund. But that's it on the amendment, Mr. Speaker. I stand for any questions.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate the hard work done to put some lipstick on this bill. I have just two, I think, questions, and they're sort of related, and that is, how many aging attorneys and what special disciplines would they have to participate in this kind of a process, and how long would it take to develop the rules that they are expected to provide? And then the second part of that one you touched on briefly is the number of years of exposure of state commitments and the total dollars that we would be have at risk in this amendment and the bill.
Chairman Watzenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure if this bill is a horse in the race with no legs, a fish on the bank gasping for air, legislation on the sly or legislation on the fly, but it's something. I do support the amendment. I think it does improve the bill, specifically in that area of raising the minimum from $350,000 to $500,000. I think that is probably the best part. And so I commend the my good friend from Park County, and I see it as a friendly amendment.
Anyone else for their second time? Mr. Representative Miley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just as from my point of view, I think this is a very interesting amendment to bring in on third reading, and I would like to make that point. The other point that it certainly does give the Attorney General to be a big player in this whole arena. And again, that's a policy decision, whether you think that that should be done. I remember in some of the testimony we heard before that we really didn't need to worry about these things because almost all of the awards in Wyoming were less than $250,000. The jury awards, the juries are very conservative, so less than $250,000 were what most of the awards were. And here we're increasing the assistance from $350,000 up to $500,000, so the difference is between $650,000 the state's going to cover to $500,000 the state is going to cover. I think it's important that this bill pass. I've got some problems with the amendment, but I heard that it's important that this bill pass. And I think I heard in the proposal of this amendment that there's a possibility it won't pass if this amendment doesn't pass. So I guess I'm neutral on the amendment, but vote your conscience. Thank you.
Anyone else for their second time? Second time. Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is House Bill 319. This bill hasn't been alive a long time. And with the volume of bills that we've had on second and third reading in the last 3 days have directed attention away to other topics. I think this is a pretty good amendment to this bill that really hasn't had much attention. I would like to think that it looks a lot better with the lipstick than it did before. And certainly it is still gasping for air, and we can toss it back into the water, and it will swim off down to the Senate, and we'll see what happens to it. How many attorneys would you need? I would think that you're looking at 2 to 3 FTE in that office who are tracking these. And that may even be liberal, because if, say, there are 50 cases that you're tracking, one attorney might be able to do that if they were really on the ball, two, and possibly three. That's my best guess on that. Special disciplines, medical malpractice defense, plaintiffs work, there are attorneys out there, and how long would the rules take? I'm not sure how lengthy the rules would have to be, actually, because we already have rules on workers' compensation. It's a similar type concept where the state participates in that process, and the years of the risk, it depends on who you're insuring, but if you're treating a minor, it can be 4 years from the date that person turns 18. If we're insuring pediatricians and obstetricians, 25 years. Birth plus 4, birth plus, that's typically what you're looking at there. But this study included the full future value. It's footnoted. I'm sorry, I don't have the references to the footnotes, but that's my answer to those questions on or for the amendment.
We're now voting on third reading amendment number 4 to House Bill 319. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. Amendment carries. Next amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 319. Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 5 to House Bill 319 and will withdraw it at the appropriate moment. Ladies and gentlemen, wanting to help this problem is something that I think all of us we've been wrestling with this for some time, but I don't think that we have the answer in front of us. We've had a lot of analogies. What do you do when you come upon a car accident and somebody's laying there and you want to help them? Well, unless you know what you're doing, what you can expect is going to be the outcome of what you're doing, you better not do anything. I can tell you a couple of things that we are doing that I think are rather negative. Is we're using the power of the state against the claimant. we're locking in and we're making an agreement with physicians who we might not particularly want to be partnering with. We don't know the unintended consequences of this. We don't even know the intended consequences. Or we know what our intended consequences is, to try to lower malpractice insurance costs, try to keep our medical community strong, but we have no indication that that's going to be the result. Mightn't we be better just to subsidize premiums, especially for this amount of money? So, Mr. Speaker, I just thought that sometimes we get real invested in things when we work on them so hard, but I think that there's a time when we need to pull back and say, we really don't, and tell ourselves, honestly, this isn't the answer, and that we really need to look at this more before moving a proposal forward.
Anyone else with their, first time? Representative Gay.
Mr. Speaker, thank you. I rise in opposition to third reading amendment number 5. The medical care crisis in this state boils down to risk and an unwillingness to assume risk. Our insurance companies don't perceive a viable market in this state, mainly because of our small population and the huge risk involved. Now we're asked to minimize our state's risk with this amendment. Passage of this amendment will only result in a more severe medical crisis. That's a crisis which is going to affect every one of us and affect our quality of life in this state. Yesterday, my good friend from House District 10 stood at this mic and read to us from the Constitution. And it said that the legislature is here to protect the health and morality of the citizens of Wyoming. It's time for this body to assume a reasonable risk and help preserve the health care as the Constitution specified, on and against this amendment.
Representative Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, in favor of the bill. I find the arguments of my good friend from Sheridan County very similar to the same arguments as we heard on the tailhook bill that we passed during the special session. And I guess the best example of the success of that particular bill is that there is still a significant amount of money left in that fund for tailhook coverage. And so that is going well in the state of Wyoming. This bill comes to us actually from several other states that already have something similar to this. One of the reasons why I'm in favor of it is because I was one of those at the special session that fought hard, very hard for tort reform, and the people of Wyoming chose not to support the amendment that I thought was very important. As a result of that, then we have to change our policy here on the floor, and that is, how are we going to recruit and retain doctors to our state? And how are we going to help those doctors handle the significant increases in malpractice insurance? And I see this bill, although struggling along, and everybody's holding their nose, and everybody's worried about what it could mean, as the only one we have left. And I think that we need to move the bill along, let the fish swim up down the stream, head off to the Senate, and see what happens there. So on and against the amendment, and in favor of the bill.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, the gasps for air of the fish are becoming more and more desperate. I want to read a communication from what I believe is the largest malpractice insurance company for doctors doing business in the state of Wyoming, dated January the 31st. And I will say they've flip-flop positions a couple times, and that's why I want to give you the date. If there are state resources available to mitigate premium increases in Wyoming, we suggest instead a state subsidy to physicians similar to Oregon's system. We recognize the effort that went into developing this proposal and the leadership shown by the proponents, especially given the results of last year's ballot question regarding caps on non-economic damages. However, the details of the bill create some insurmountable problems. We believe that the proposals introduced will most likely require increased premiums. Major factors in this assessment include: qualifying for fund payments will require settlements distinguished between economic and non-economic damages. Making this distinction is likely to delay or even prevent settlements. Full participation by the state in claims is likely to stall the negotiation process and delay or even prevent settlements, particularly if the state has the ability to veto an agreement or an incentive to shift damages from non-economic to economic to keep the fund solvent. Company costs will increase. Negotiating claims under the bill's provisions specifying non-economic damages and adding the state as a participant will take longer and consume more staff and council hours. Complying with the reporting requirements will add costs. Policy limits play a role in determining the value placed on the claim, especially by the claimant's attorney. The fund's portion of the large claim essentially increases the available resources to pay the claim from a typical $1 million policy to $1,650,000. This will lead to larger demands and increase the severity of claims. If you want to vote for this bill to keep it alive and send it swimming down to the Senate, there might be some reasons to do that. If you want to vote against this bill, I think the statements that are made right here provide the cover you need to vote against this bill in good faith, on and against the bill.
Representative Miley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm on and against amendment and for the bill, Mr. Speaker. A couple things that I want to remind the body. Number one is when you look at the number of physicians per patient in the state of Wyoming, according to the LSO, we're about 49th in the nation as far as more patients per doctor than most of the other states in the union. We are hearing more and more about more doctors that are either retiring, relocating, or restricting their practices. And I want to go back. What we're trying to do is figure out some way here that we can continue to recruit and retain doctors in the state of Wyoming so that our people will have access to medical care. We talk a lot about the plaintiffs and the victims who are harmed by medical practice. We never talk about the number of victims, from my point of view, who are unable to access medical care in this state. And it's an important part of economic development that we be able to access medical care. So anything that we can do to help in that process, I think, is important. The previous speaker mentioned about how the insurance companies have flip-flopped on this a couple times. I don't know whether I agree with the letter or not. As you've heard, there have been times when they felt that by passing this bill that it would help stabilize insurance premiums for liability insurance. I think that certainly is a real possibility, and I think we need to do something to do this. I'm not real enthusiastic about this bill, but we've only got two things going: the medical review panel and some sort of assistance to our physicians to try to keep them in the state of Wyoming. And to me, we need at least this much to go forward so that we've got some idea of some success of possibly reversing this trend that we're presently seeing in the state. So on and against the amendment and in favor of the bill, and thank you for your indulgence.
Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. favor of the amendment and against the bill as amended. Many in this body, and I was one of them, worked very hard during the budget session and the special session to come up with an answer to this crisis that we're experiencing. The voters chose on Amendment D to not allow caps on non-economic damage. And with that, the wind went out of the sails of a lot of people. I think that would be the doctors, the legislators, probably a number of attorneys, as to just what to do. The problem remains and is being exacerbated. House Bill 119 is, as you've heard, is an attempt to help. However, I think it misses the mark. It would be a mistake in my mind to take a bill and try to dress it up as best we could and send it flopping down the corridor to the Senate to try to put some sort of sense together on something that we couldn't do here. It was a rush to do something so we could say we'd done something. That's not the strongest argument for us passing things out of this chamber in any event. A bill that puts the state of Wyoming in the insurance and litigation business without any assurance of lower cost of insurance or increases in medical care availability or even recruiting that has been touched on so many times. The state's costs are unknown, the liability will be extensive, and even with lipstick, this is not a good amended bill. I urge your defeat of the bill. I support the amendment.
Representative Ellaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, we've talked about medical insurance and all medical problems during the special session. We spent a week down there. And we even looked at this concept. Again, this is a start. If we don't try and get somewhere, we never quite get out of the starting gate. Now, this may not be the best. It's certainly not the worst. It's been worked. It may not have been worked enough, but it's a start. And if we don't start, we'll never get to the end. So let's go ahead and pass this bill and against the amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Gay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple speakers ago, we heard some material that was dated January 31st. I'd like to remind everybody that about 15 minutes ago, we passed a four-page amendment to this bill that addressed every point in that letter but one. The point that wasn't addressed was the similarity to the Oregon bill. Our state's constitution won't allow us to do what Oregon has done, so that becomes a moot point. This letter was read to you and offered as a cover for voting against this bill. I offer to you that your cover has got a lot of holes in it since the passage of the four-page amendment that we just did a few minutes ago. That would be third reading, Amendment 4. On and against the amendment, in favor of the bill.
Anyone else for the first time? First time. Second time. Representative Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and the good representative from Natrona County is correct. The good representative from Park County, who spends so much of his time rewriting bills, received that same letter and tried to address every issue that was in that letter. So, in my mind, the bill is much improved, and it is a start. And I ask, when are we going to do something to address the health care crisis that we're having in our state? And if not with this bill, what's left? And if not now, when? Are we going to come back in the budget session and do something? Time to start is now. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Anyone else for their second time? Representative Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we should take just a minute and celebrate what we have done.
We just passed House Bill 83. That could have an incredible impact on our medical providers. That could be one big step. That's one big step that worked in the past. That's one big step that we have some reliability on. It's going to have a desired result that we want. Mr. Speaker, I want to say that the previous amendment was a great effort. But it was a great effort made without the time put in to hear from all the parties that normally would come to an interim committee and be able to make contributions and assure us that some of our consequences were, or that the consequences of what we were doing is what we intended. So we're just about to, if we pass this, we're going to go into an area where we're going to spend $5 million and we're going to open up the treasury of the state. We are opening up the treasury of the state to uncertain results. We just have no true assurance that this is going to give us the results we wanted. And the thing that really bothers me the most about that is what I'll just end up with is by calling unfulfilled expectations. And that is the expectations on our part that all of us have that this is going to make a difference. And how disappointing it's going to be when we find out it's not. And the expectations that we're giving to all our medical community around the state, that this is going to be something that's really going to improve your situation and improve premiums, when in fact we have no assurance that that's going to happen. That probably is the most unfair part of the bill that bothers me the most. Mr. Speaker, we have we've been living with this for a number of years. I would say to the body that I think that we can live with it for one more year while we come up with a solution that has a likelihood of having a consequence that really will make our medical providers have a stronger community and a stronger ability to deliver their services. At this point, I will withdraw the amendment and urge our defeat of this bill for the future time when we can come up with a real successful proposal. Thank you.
Without objection, third reading amendment number 5 has been withdrawn. House Bill 319 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the House of Representatives? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Barnard. Berger. Rechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Ewells. Childers. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Davison. Dirks. Edwards. Escobel. Gay. Gilmore. Gingery. Doggles. Hageman. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Hastert. Hinckley. Eichel. Illaway. Jackson. Jones. Jorgensen excused. Landon. Latta. Lockhart. Lubnow. Martin. McComey. Miley. Miller. Morgan. Olson. Osborne. Pedersen. Peterson. Philp. Powers. Korberg. Mr. Minority Floor Leader. Robinson. Samuelson. Semlich. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Slater. Thompson. Walsh. Warren. Wasserberger. Wasserberger. Watt. White. Zwanitzer. Mr. Speaker, I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Recto, no to aye. Gay, aye to no. Are there any other changes? Vote is closed. 41 ayes, 18 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 319, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of those members elected to the House, House Bill 319 has passed the House. Don't act like you're going anywhere. We're now in that order of business of reading of bills and consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. Motion carries.
What do we have to
do? Representative Goggle.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File Number 2. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 2, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to Water Resources Library repeal.
We have heard the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Hageman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee as a whole rise to report it, do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 2. There's no standing committee amendments, and this is really a good bill, and I'm going to tell you why. What the bill does is just simply does away with the requirement that they have a water resources library over in the state engineer's office, and these are some of the reasons he gave us for the repeal of this library. There's four different reasons. Since inception of these statutes, the state engineer has not been funded to manage a library, although such a library has been provided. As recently as 2002, the visitation by the public to the state engineer's water library was as low as 7 individuals in the entire year. Substantial interest has been expressed by the state library system and the water resources data system library in Laramie to house many of the water documents that have been housed in the state engineer's office. The online search capabilities of both these entities would make searches for such documents far easier for members of the public. And also, the state engineer is committed to provide both formal libraries with a card catalog database of the documents remaining in his agency's possession so that knowledge of the location of these documents will not be lost. That's the reason for the bill, and if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any discussion?
If not, I'd move to the
question. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Hageman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation of Senate File Number 2, do pass. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senate File 2 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 30. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 30, introduced by the Judiciary, an act relating to the National Crime Prevention and Privacy Compact Act.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 30. There are no standing committee amendments, and I would turn the bill over to the good representative from the shadow of Tabletop Mountain.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Senate File 30, National Crime Prevention and Privacy Act. The purpose of the National Crime Prevention and Privacy Compact Act is to facilitate the sharing of criminal record information for non-criminal justice purposes by implementing a uniform dissemination policy among the party states. Simply stated, it allows for the dissemination of criminal record information based on the laws of the recipient state. This bill would allow Wyoming to join 21 other states in the Interstate Criminal History Record Sharing Agreement. Under the compact, member states agreed to make all unsealed criminal history records available to each other in response to authorized non-criminal record requests. In Wyoming, non-criminal record requests include areas such as background checks on persons applying for jobs in schools, hospitals, nursing homes, daycares, and just to name a few, the developmentally disabled. There are 21 states that are in the compact presently. When the compact is ratified, it will eliminate duplication and maintenance of criminal histories and records. You will notice that it is a compact. This compact must be ratified as is, cannot be amended. And with that, I would like to go through the elements of the compact. If we look on page 2, Article 1, the definitions, this article sets out definitions for key terms used in the compact. Most of the definitions are substantially identical to definitions commonly used in federal and state laws. Article 2, page 9, the purpose, 5 purposes are listed. The creation of a legal framework for the establishment of the compact, the delineation of the FBI's obligation under the compact, the delineation of the obligations of the party states, creation of the compact council to monitor systems, operations, and promulgate the necessary rules, and establishment of the obligation by the states to adhere to the compact and its related rules and standards. Page 10, Article 3. Responsibility of the compact parties. Article 3 talks about the federal government, the FBI, and what their obligations are. The state's obligations are similar to the FBI's obligations, the federal government's obligations. Page 15, Article 4, authorized record disclosures. This article requires the FBI, to the extent authorized by the Privacy Act, and the state's criminal history records responsibilities to provide criminal history records to one another for the use by governmental or non-governmental agencies for non-criminal justice purposes that are authorized by federal statutes and that has been approved by the Attorney General. Page 17, Article 5, delineates the record request procedures. Page 20, Article 6, establishment of the Compact Council. This article establishes the Compact Council to promulgate rules and procedures governing the use of the system for non-criminal justice purposes. Page 24, Article 7, ratification of the compact. This article states that the compact will become effective immediately upon ratification. Page 25, Article 8, miscellaneous provisions. This article makes clear that the administration of the compact should not interfere with the authority of the FBI director, or the management and control of the FBI's collection and dissemination of criminal history records. Similarly, nothing in the compact diminishes the state's obligations under any laws. Page 26, Article 9, renunciation of the article. This article may be renunciated by the same method as it will be ratified. Page 27, severability. This Article 10 provides for that any provisions of the article that is found to be unconstitutional, then the article itself, or the compact itself, then is not it's done with, to put it simply. Page 28, adjudication and disputes, just delineates how the compact council will adjudicate disputes, and that essentially is the compact. One note on this, it will speed up the process for the dissemination of information. There is no adverse effect financially on the states. And that is it, and I would stand for any questions.
Question being called for? All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a recommendation that Senate File 30 do pass. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 30 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 73. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 73, introduced by Senator Hawks, an act relating to mines and minerals regarding the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Alloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable consideration on Senate File 73, Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission penalties. And there is a standing committee amendment. I'll move it now and let the chairman, if he would like, to discuss it from the center of the state.
We are on standing committee amendment number one. Discussion. Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a very simple standing committee amendment. It just corrects where any of the penalty charges will go, and then language to straighten out the numbers and sequence. I urge your support of the standing committee amendment number one. Call for the question.
Call for the question. You have heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? All those in favor say aye. Opposed? The standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We are back on the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the good representative from Laramie County to explain the bill, and I'll turn it over to him, or you can.
Representative Samuelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a simple bill that was brought to us by the Oil and Gas Commission and to our committee, a committee I might say that I am thrilled to still be a member of. Mr. Chairman, the Oil and Gas Commission has found out that these penalties, when they're very low, people just blow them off and fail to file some of the items they're supposed to because of the rules and regulations of the Oil and Gas Commission. When the fines are high, they seem to file the reports that they're required to. We didn't have any negative information from the oil lobby and the oil and gas participants in this state. I think it's probably a very good bill. With the standing committee amendment, it now makes where these fines go constitutional. Before they were, we're going to be dealing with that a lot more from some of these Senate files. But if there's no discussion, I'd ask for the question.
Question being called for? All those in favor of Chairman Elloway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 73 do pass. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 73 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill, for our consideration, is Senate File 145. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 145, introduced by Senator Allman, an act relating to the Uniform State Accounting System, credit card payments to state agencies.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senate File 45. Chairman Ottaway.
If you skipped a bill, we can go ahead and do this one.
Senate File 45.
We'll go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, my mistake. That is Senate File 145.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable consideration on Senate File 145, credit card payments to state agencies, and the good representative from the land of the boiling water will discuss it.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 145 basically amends Section 94217, and it allows state agencies that are currently accepting credit cards for payment. They charge the customer a convenience fee in order to use a credit card. Oftentimes that fee is $1.50 to $2. This allows that fee that they collect to in turn allows that agency to then pay the bank fee that they are charged for that transaction. Currently, state law does not allow them to use the convenience fee that they collect to turn around and pay the bank for the transaction fee when they process the credit card. And I stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman Alloway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, we do so with the recommendation that Senate File 145 do pass. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? Senate File 145 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You will, members, please note that on the general file publication that you have from this morning, that three bills have been removed as they were re-referred to appropriations. They include Senate File 15, Senate File 35, and Senate File 9. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 38. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 38, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to Child Custody, Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 38 do pass, and I yield the floor to the good representative from the land of Goshen.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring to you Senate File 38, the Uniform Child Custody Jurisdiction and Enforcement Act. Currently in Wyoming, under Title 20, we have the UCCJA. That's just the regular act, and basically this adds some enforcement provisions. The UCCJA was promulgated in 1968. And was originally intended to discourage interstate kidnapping and other types of forum shopping in child custody cases. The problems with the UCCJA and the reason this bill has come over from the Senate side is that it doesn't prioritize which state has jurisdiction, allowing for more than one state to make decisions in the same child custody case. It's also inconsistent with other states and federal laws applying to child custody. It doesn't make child custody orders enforceable in other states or Indian reservations under the full faith and credit provisions of federal law. And it requires a child to be abused or threatened with abuse before a court can take emergency jurisdiction over a case. And lastly, it doesn't address domestic violence at all. The UCCJEA, in contrast, and this is just a little 53-page bill that I'll try and get through rather quickly so you don't all fall asleep. And if anybody has any questions afterwards, because I'm going to go pretty quickly, you can feel free to ask me about it, and I'll try and address your concerns. The UCCJEA was in 1997. Currently, 40 states have enacted it, and 6 states, including Wyoming, are introducing this legislation this year. The UCCJEA increases the enforceability of Wyoming custody orders in other states, tribes, and territories of the United States. It allows for domestic violence protection orders to be specifically included in the definition of custody orders. It also allows emergency jurisdiction when a child or sibling or parent of the child is subjected to or threatened with domestic violence, mistreatment, or abuse. And this proposed UCCJEA bill deletes the UCCJA and replaces that section in Title 20 as we know it with this Model Act. So, if you want to pick up the bill very quickly, the first few pages are simply definitions. Many of these are similar to what we have in the UCCJA. On page 6, you see the special provision that is applicable to tribes, such that this act doesn't cover child custody proceedings when applied to an Indian child as defined under the Indian Child Welfare Act. Moving on to page 7, international application, that makes this act, and just like it can be used with another state to enforce a child custody determination, now if there's an order for a foreign country, some kind of custody order from a foreign country, we can do things to enforce those custody orders in the United States and in the state where the child resides. On the bottom of page 7 there, the effect of child custody determination. Basically, child custody determination made by a court of this state that had jurisdiction under this act shall bind all persons who have been served in accordance with the laws of the state. The rest of page 8 deals with priority when there are questions about different child custody orders and proceedings. Page 9 deals with appearance and limited immunity. Basically says if you're summoned to court for a child custody case, they can't serve process on you for other things if you came to the state solely for the purpose of the Child Custody Act. Page 10 is communication between courts. This is very similar to the UCCJA, but they are specifically encouraging courts to communicate with each other to find out which state would be the most appropriate forum to determine child custody. And that goes right along with page 12, cooperation between courts and preservation of record. Page 14 is jurisdiction, initial child custody jurisdiction. This is really the basic, most basic part of UCCJEA. It's pretty much the same as the old JA, and basically says that, except otherwise noted, a court of the state has jurisdiction to make an initial child custody determination if the state is the home state of the children, they live here for 6 months, there's substantial evidence of training, education, relationships, etc. And no other state has jurisdiction under provision of a similar law in that other state. And if no court of any other state would have jurisdiction under the same criteria. That's on page 16 and continuing on. Exclusive continuing jurisdiction. A court in this state that makes an initial custody determination has continuing exclusive jurisdiction under this act until a court of the state determines that the child, the parents, or any person acting as a parent no longer have those significant connections with this state, or a court of the state or a court of another state determines that the child or their parents do not presently reside in the state. Continuing on the bottom of page 17, it talks about jurisdiction to modify determination. That's what it means to modify a custody order after the initial determination. A court of the state may not modify a child custody determination made by a court of another state unless the court of the state has jurisdiction to make an initial determination, like we just talked about. And further on page 18, the court of the other state determines it has no longer has that exclusive continuing jurisdiction, or a court of this state or a court of the other state determines that the child's parents no longer live in that state. The bottom of page 18 deals with temporary emergency jurisdiction. This is something new to the UCCJE and is improvement over the old act. The court of the state has temporary emergency jurisdiction if the child is present in the state and the child has been abandoned or it is necessary in an emergency to protect the child because the child or his siblings or a parent of the child is subject to abuse or mistreatment. Now I'm going to fast forward a little bit to some more important points. Page 23, 24 is inconvenient forum. I know this is exciting. Stay with me. A court of the state which has jurisdiction may decline jurisdiction if it finds that it is an inconvenient forum under the circumstances and that another court in another state is best suited to make the child custody determination. That's kind of the common sense approach under this act so that we don't always have to stay within the rules if there's a good reason why another state should take jurisdiction. And you can see on down from page 24 and on to page 25 a list of the factors used to consider whether or not a court of this state is an inconvenient forum. Page 26, jurisdiction declined by reason of conduct. This is another new and improved area of the Uniform Child Custody Act. Basically, a court of this state, it has jurisdiction under this act, but it can decline it if a person who comes to this state or removes a child to this state is engaging in an unjustifiable conduct. If you read the provisions on page 26 and on to page 27, it'll tell you there what the exceptions to that are. A lot of times you'll have somebody take a child, if one parent will take another child to another state and try to get the court to make a determination on custody in less than meritorious circumstances. And in those cases, the court can send them back to the state from which they came. Page 28 is not too important. 32, enforcement. Give some definitions there. On page 33, enforcement of the Hague Convention. This goes back to the enforcement aspect under international law that I spoke of earlier on the bill. A court of this state under this provision can enforce an order for the return of a child made under the Hague Convention on the civil aspect of international child abduction as if it were an original custody child custody determination. As, again, you've probably seen the cases where somebody from another country marries somebody here, they have a kid, and then they take off with the child, and there's no way to get the child back. They have to basically go and kidnap the child to bring them back to this country. Page 34, temporary visitation. Even if a court of this state does not have jurisdiction to modify a child custody determination, they may issue a temporary order enforcing visitation or prescribing visitation in specific circumstances. Pages 34 and 35 show us how we can register a child custody determination made in another state. Thank you very much. That allows me to keep talking. And pages 36 and 37 go on to continue those factors. Let's see here. What else is important? 39, 25, 408 is the expedited enforcement of child custody determination. That's basically, basically just says that the court has to expedite these cases on their docket. And let's see what else I have highlighted here. Moving on to page 45, this the UCCJE also provides that someone can have a warrant to take physical custody of a child. The person files a petition that's verified application, and if the child is likely to suffer serious physical harm, can be removed from the person who has custody, especially if the person is going to remove him from the state. Last, page 52, jurisdiction for enforcement and modification. The court of the state that enters a custody order has continuing subject matter jurisdiction to enforce and modify the decree concerning the care, custody, control of the child. Do you have any questions?
Is there any discussion
later?
On Senate file 38. Question being called? All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, it goes to do so with the recommendation that Senate file 38 do pass. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no.
Senate File 38 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 74. Reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 74, introduced by Senator Jennings, an act relating to the Wyoming Environmental Quality Act.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Representative Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill Number 74 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments. I call on a good representative from the community that has the University of Wyoming in it to explain the bill.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a simple amendment to the Wyoming Environmental Quality Act that allows them to do their business by electronic transmittals. It simplifies their procedures and allows them to receive this information in digital form, which is an advantage for them. It makes reference to the uniform, well, I think it actually makes reference to the sections in the statutes. It says it's to be done in accordance with sections 40, 21, 101 through 119. That is what's known as the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, which was passed by this body in 2001 and applies extensively to the electronic transmissions, storage of electronic records, time and place of sending receipt, secured signatures, and the like. It pretty extensively covers it. This makes reference to that. Should simplify, both simplify and speed up the business of the Department of Environmental Quality. And I stand for questions.
Is there discussion? Question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 74 do pass. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 74 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 17. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 17, introduced by the Agriculture Committee, an act relating to agriculture and animals, the Pest Control Compact.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Hageman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when a committee of the whole rise to report or do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate File 17, Pest Control Compact, and I'll yield to the announcer of probably one of the most interesting programs that goes on in the state of Wyoming, the legend of Rawhide from Lusk, Wyoming, who will explain this bill.
Representative Durf.
On behalf of our community, Mr. Chairman, we thank you for that plug. Members of the House, we bring you Senate File 17, Interstate Pest Control Compact. And let me start with some key words. This bill contains no appropriation. Members of the House, the Interstate Pest Control Compact is based on a concept of a membership-funded insurance fund to provide grant funding for members for plant pest eradication and control programs. It's an organization of states created to bridge the economic and jurisdictional gap between state governments and state and federal governments to combat plant pests. It's designed to control new and localized infestations of agricultural and forestry pests, not wide-ranging infestations. The concept of the IPCC was initiated and endorsed by the Council of State Governments. What does Wyoming gain from such a program? Wyoming can request that grant funding be awarded to neighboring states for control of plant pests outside of Wyoming's borders, which will help prevent the pest from entering Wyoming. This compact allows Wyoming's participation in regional and national pest management strategies, and it allows other states to request funding for plant pests in Wyoming if we need that funding. What will Wyoming lose if we don't pass this? The ability to request and direct grant dollars to surrounding states for Wyoming's protection, the ability to work within a viable regional and national cooperative plant pest prevention program, and the ability to receive grant dollars. So, members of the House, what about the membership dues? Since 1968, none of the member states have paid more than one dues assessment. Wyoming has already paid its dues of $3,250, and if another round of dues payments are required, they can be payable over a six-year period. Such a deal. Now, I know a lot of you probably are wondering what relation this has to the groundbreaking, cutting-edge legislation of a few years ago called the Wyoming Insect Management I forgot the title of it already. I asked that very question in committee, and our Insect Management Compact, the infamous bug bill, that deals with wide-ranging infestations of the West Nile virus and things like that. This is specific toward minor infestations, and it is boilerplate legislation. If we amend it, we might get kicked out of the compact. I urge the members of the House to vote favorably.
Discussion. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Hageman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, is do so with a recommendation that bill House Senate file number 17 do pass. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed? No. Senate file 17 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 75. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate file 75 introduced by Senator Jennings, an act relating to industrial development and citing electronic transmittals.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rises to report and do so with recommendation that Bill Number 75 do pass. There are no amendments. And I call on the good representative still from the University of Wyoming community to explain the bill.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an amendment to the Industrial Development and Siting Act, an act close to my heart, with which I spent a good deal of your time one day in discussion. This would extend to that agency the same privileges of electronic transmission and electronic records that I referenced recently. It also makes reference to the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act, and it will allow them to do their business more efficiently and more quickly. And I stand for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions on Senate File 75? Questions? Excuse me. Chairman Phelps. Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, is do so with a recommendation that Senate File 75 do pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? None opposed. Senate File 75 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration, the Senate File 27. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 27 introduced by the Appropriations Committee and act relating to administration of government regarding judicial retirement.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Phelps.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 27. There are no standing committee amendments, and I turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from Sheridan County.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This certainly isn't as exciting as pest control compacts, but I will tell you that this is to do with an act that we established in 1998 for the Wyoming Judicial Retirement Plan. What we are dealing with is the contribution amount that has been unfunded and was consequently a state liability. What happened is we found out from our actual firm that the Wyoming retirement system has been underfunded by 3.10%. And what we're trying to do now is not make up for what was not currently put into the system, but to move forward. And so we'll increase it from the original amount of 5.68% of the salary to 3.10%, giving it a total of 8.78%. And consequently, that is an appropriation of $95,000, or in a biennium, it will be $190,000. And this will take place effectively so that we can start forward with meeting our requirements. And so I would ask for your approval on the bill.
Representative Hinckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to declare a conflict on Senate File 27.
Any other discussion? Representative, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a question. It looks like a 3% increase of the employer contribution. Looks like it's going to be $95,000 every year in the future. And since there's another bill coming that's going to be adding judges, that amount will even be more. My question is, are we increasing the percentage just for judges, or are we increasing the percentage, or are there going to be other bills that we're going to see where we're increasing the percentage for other state employees, or are the judges just getting this increase?
Mr. Chairman, it is just for the judges, and it was in one of the new plan, so it's a specific number of judges that we're actually addressing this issue with.
Additional discussion? Question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Chairman Phelps' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 27 do pass. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, no. Senate File 27 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 50. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 50, introduced by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding soliciting of minors.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 50 do pass. There are no standing committee amendments, and I will turn over the handling of the bill from the good representative from the shadow of Whitehall.
Representative White.
Mr. Chairman, I bring to you Senate File 50, which is sponsored by the Joint Judiciary Interim Committee. This bill amends the language in the sexual exploitation of children and soliciting to engage in illicit sexual relations statutes. In Wyoming Statute 64303, the proposed changes in this law involve the definitions of child pornography. Due to a U.S. Supreme Court decision that struck down the wording in the U.S. Code, which is what our existing statute is modeled after, the words appears to be are ruled unconstitutionally vague, and in the U.S. Child Protection Act of 2003, those words were replaced with is virtually indistinguishable from. In subsections B and C of 64303, on page 2 of this bill, the language is amended to bring our statute in line with the current U.S. Code. Subsection D of 64303 is repealed on page 3, section 2 of this bill, as it criminalized the presentation of materials without regard to content. There did not appear to be a legal remedy, and therefore was requested that it be removed. Wyoming Statute 14.3.104 is amended to read, except under circumstance constituting sexual assault in the first, second, or third degree, as defined by Wyoming Statute 62302 through 62304, anyone who solicits, procures, or knowingly encourages anyone under the age of 16 years or a person purported to be under the age of 16 years to engage in illicit sexual penetration or sexual intrusion as defined by Wyoming Statute 62301, or knowingly causes or encourages any person to solicit, procure, or encourage a person under the age of 16 or a person purported to be under the age of 16 to commit any illicit sexual penetration or sexual intrusion as defined by Wyoming Statute 62301 is guilty of a felony. Upon conviction, shall be imprisoned for a term of not more than 5 years. The changes on page 3, lines 2 and 3, and line 7, adding the wording or purported to be to incorporate the current investigative techniques used by law enforcement where the supposed victim is actually a law enforcement officer posing as a child. The changes on page 3, lines 4 through 9, add wording that criminalizes the solicitation of sexual conduct of a child through another person. The law enforcement internet investigations have demonstrated that this is an active technique used by pedophiles to target children too young to chat online themselves by soliciting parents or guardians to allow the criminal contact with the child. Therefore, in this form, this bill would not only make the Solicitation Act illegal, but also the action of setting up such an act illegal as well. That's pretty much the extent of this bill, and I will stand for any questions.
Discussion on Senate File 50. Representative Wassenberger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the floor manager. In this particular bill, would it be possible for a minor to solicit a minor and be charged with this act?
Representative White.
I believe it could be, yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wassenberger.
Thank you. Then on second reading, I plan to bring an amendment to address that issue. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on Senate File 50? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report, to do so with the recommendation that Senate File number 50 do pass. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Senate File 50 has passed the committee of the whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion that the committee of the whole rise and report. All those in favor of the motion say aye. Opposed? No. Motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the report.
Mr. Speaker, your committee of the whole having had on consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 2, recommended do pass. Senate File 30, recommended do pass. Senate File 73, amended, recommended do pass. Senate File 145, recommended do pass. Senate File 38, recommended do pass. Senate File 74, recommended do pass. Senate File 17, recommended do pass. Senate File 75, recommended do pass. Senate File 27, Representative Hinckley announced a conflict on Senate File number 27, recommended do pass. Senate File 50, recommended do pass. Signed, Representative Goggles, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the report. What is your pleasure?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Goggles.
I move the adoption of the committee of the whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Report is adopted. Messages from the Senate.
Message number 235, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 93, Nursing Practice Act Amendments, ayes 29, no 0, excused 1. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 236, Mr. Speaker. The bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 118, Wyoming Business Ready Community Program, ayes 28, no 1, excused 1. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 237, Mr. Speaker, the bill that's below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 150, Special Prosecution Account, ayes 25, noes 4, excused 1, signed by Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 238, Mr. Speaker, the bill that's below passed the Senate on the third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 159, National Guard Youth Program, ayes 25, noes 4, excused 1, signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 239. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 162, Wyoming Historic Mine Trail System. Ayes 29, no 0, excused 1. Signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 240. Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 166, State Drug Wholesaler. Ayes 29, excused 1, signed, Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 241, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 170, Controlled Substances Penalties, ayes 25, noes 4, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 242, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File number 172, GAAP Accounting Implementation, ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 243, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading but in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 173, Assault Upon Corrections or Detention Officer, ayes 24, noes 5, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 244, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 71, Wyoming Community Facilities Program, ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 245, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 132, First Responders Criminal Background Checks, ayes 29, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 246, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below failed to pass the Senate third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 165, Loss of Chance Doctrine Abrogated, ayes 13, no 16, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 247, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in amended form by the vote indicated. Senate Joint Resolution Number 6, Recapture Limitation, ayes 25, noes 4, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 248, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate Joint Resolution Number 7, Oath of Office, ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 249, Mr. Speaker, the bills listed below pass the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. Senate File 122, Higher Education Endowments Account, ayes 28, noes 1, excused 1, signed Diane Harvey, Senate Chief Clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Reading Clerk. Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 1 on Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 96, respectfully reports Senate back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Alden, Bagby, Buchanan, Landon, Lubnow, Olson, Robinson, Watt, White, signed Representative Landon, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 3 on Revenue, to whom is referred Senate File 34, respectfully reports Senate back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Anderson, Buholtz, Gay, Gilmore, Hartman, Astrid, Miller, Pedersen, Walsh, signed Representative Anderson, Chairman.
Thank you. Committee announcements. Chairman Illaway, first out of the chute.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet tomorrow, Thursday, in House 18, upon noon recess, and we will work Senate File 61, Annexation. And before the committee members leave, if they could stop over here at my desk, we will have a packet of proposed amendments that you can take a look at tonight.
Thank you, Chairman Illaway. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, has a revised schedule for Friday morning. We'll meet at 8 o'clock and include Senate File 13, Residential Mortgage Practices Act, Senate File 11, Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission Charges Deadline, and Senate File 127, Four Main Highway Funding.
Thank you, Chairman Lockhart. Chairman Wasserberger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 4, House Education, will meet Wednesday, February 9th, 2005, upon adjournment in Room H10 to hear the following bills. SF-29 in gross, school capital construction major maintenance payment dates, and SF-87 in gross, school building major maintenance payments. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Chairman Wasberger, thank you. Chairman Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your Committee Number 1, Judiciary, will meet tomorrow at 8 o'clock in Room 302 to hear one bill. Senate File 60. Split estates, procedures for oil and gas operations.
Thank you, Chairman Landon. Chairman Hageman.
Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 5 on Agriculture will meet tomorrow morning at H11 at 7:30 to hear Senate File 56 in gross, temporary water use municipalities, House Bill 149 engrossed conservation easements, and Senate File 18 engrossed grain laws.
Thank you, Chairman Hageman. Chairman Osborne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a reminder for all the members, for those of you who wonder what is a PDA, there will be a demonstration twice tomorrow, once from 8 till 10 in the morning in room 301, and then again at 12 to 2 in the afternoon. And Mr. Speaker, your standing committee number 10 on Labor, Health, and Social Services will meet tonight upon adjournment to consider Senate File 79 Workers' Comp Fund, Senate File 82 Workers' Comp Amendments, Senate File 80 Unemployment Comp Amendments, and Senate File 97 Unemployment Insurance Delinquencies.
Thank you, Chairman Osborne. Representative Jones.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 2 appropriations will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H14 to consider Senate File 9 Intangible Property Taxation Study, Senate File 15 State Land Trust Preservation Account, Senate File 35 District Court Judge Increase, Senate File 147 State Employee Retirement, and Senate File 148 Volunteer Fireman Pension Fund Benefit Adjustment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Jones. Chairman Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet tomorrow afternoon upon adjournment to consider Senate File 156, Multi-Lane Highway Speed Regulation, Senate File 48, Veteran Surviving Spouse, and Senate File 14, Engrossed Graduated Driver Licenses.
How did that get off? Any other announcements? Chairman, Representative Walsh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to the floor. Legislative prayer breakfast reminder tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. at the Hitching Post. We're through by 7 o'clock. Just a great breakfast, a little break from everything. Hope to see all of you at the Hitching Post tomorrow, 6 a.m. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that appears to clear the desk.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. General file for tomorrow. There is a distribution going around, but it's already incorrect. Senate File 36 lies in the middle of that distribution that you have. It has been re-referred to appropriations, so it will be moved to the bottom of the list. So, Mr. Speaker, the general file for tomorrow will be Senate Files 108, 31, 12, 42, 72, 115, 26, 5, 6, 22, 44, 51, 59, 34, 55, 96, and other bills that may be reported out of committee that we may have time to work. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move the House adjourn until Thursday, February 10th at 10 a.m.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Members of the House, you've done remarkable, well, almost remarkable work today. Lots of good debate. The schedule will lighten up, as you can probably see, as we start to work the Senate file. So that will give us plenty of time to scrutinize them closely. You've heard the motion that we adjourn until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. Motion carries. The House is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow morning.